Big TV manufacturers made big news at CES, while NBCU and Disney stepped up their ad games. Meanwhile, Netflix grew ad tier users and Amazon's headcount is shrinking. Listen now.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media is with me for our second podcast of 2024. Hello again, Colin.
Hey, Will, and it is CES week, and I think both Will and I are pleased not to be in Las Vegas, but we have been paying a lot of attention to what's going on in Las Vegas, and we'll certainly talk about some of that today, right, Will?
Absolutely, and yes, happy to not be in Las Vegas, but following CES closely, and you actually were following some of the announcements from the TV manufacturers, and that is where we're going to get started today.
I was, and this is always, I always look forward to hearing what the TV manufacturers are doing, because that gives us an indication, really a good indication of where the TV OS market is headed. And as we've talked about how important the TV OSs are in the market, I'll kick us off with one thing that actually I found to be quite a big surprise. There was an announcement by Panasonic that they were going to be putting Fire TV, Amazon's Fire TV, will be on all of Panasonic's new TVs. And this is actually quite a big surprise. They've been using Android TV in the past. So really, they're switching horses. They're going all in with Amazon. And I think this is a really big win for Amazon. The principal reason Fire TV, I think, has been so successful is because Amazon has done just a superb job of selling sticks and dongles through its website. And so when people were looking to upgrade their experience to smart TV, that's what they got. You know, they were very, very, Amazon was very, very quick to suggest a dongle. But the market is really switching to smart TVs. And so I think it has become increasingly important for Amazon to be successful on smart TVs if they are going to be successful with Fire TV. And it's very important that they are, because it's such a powerful position, this owning the interface. It gives Amazon the opportunity to really promote things like Freevee and sell movies and rent movies through Amazon's movie store. So it's a very, very powerful position. So it's very important that they be successful there. So this is a big win for them. They announced two TVs, two ranges of TVs. And this is on their Panasonic's flagship OLED TVs, the Z95A, which is in two models, 55 inch and 65 inch, and the Z93A, which is a 77 inch set. Boy, I don't think I've got room for a 77 inch set in my house.
Not many people do.
No. So I think that's a big win for Fire TV, Will.
Yeah, I completely agree. Definitely a big step forward for them.
Yep. And I should say, also this week, I'm releasing, if you want to understand the TV OS market, I just released a class called Getting to Grips with a Connected TV, with Connected TV Platforms, a primer on the gatekeepers of the CTV market. And that will get you up to speed in just a little over an hour. That will get you up to speed on that market. If you're new to the area, or even if you're not, you should probably check that out. I cover all the top TV OSs in quite a lot of detail and talk about their strengths and weaknesses. So anyway, check out my website for that class. And now the second thing was, this is, I'd love to hear what you think about this, Will, but Samsung has added profiles to Tizen. Tizen, of course, is Samsung's TV OS. And basically what this does is, you know, everybody knows what profiles are. You can set up your own profile on the television. So when you're watching, it gives you recommendations that are more closely tailored to you. It allows families with children to set up protected children accounts so that they can't get to, you know, unsavory content, et cetera, et cetera. And I've actually been using Google TV. That's the primary TV that we use in my house now. And we've been using profiles on this TV. I honestly, I think that they're more annoying than useful to me. I don't have kids in my house, so I don't have that issue. And the reason I find them annoying is that a lot of the TV apps don't work with those profiles in the OS. So what does that mean? It means I turn my TV on. Google asks me, who are you? I say, I'm Colin. And then I go and I start Paramount Plus. And Paramount Plus says, who are you? And I say, Colin. And then I can look at my recommendations inside of Paramount Plus and start watching. So it just really becomes annoying rather than useful. And I'm not really sure the personalization part. There's another annoying part, which is specific to Google, and that is that I have YouTube Premium, and we watch a lot of YouTube in my household. The problem is that YouTube Premium is tied to an individual user, not to a TV. So what that means is that you can watch ad-free on my profile, but you can't watch ad-free on my wife's profile. So what that means is we end up watching everything on my profile anyway. So, you know, all of this just tells me, I just don't know how much use profiles are to people that don't have kids. Do you have a device that has profiles, Will?
I don't. I use profiles at the streaming service level. So to your point, with YouTube TV, I use profiles, and with Netflix, and I'm trying to think, HBO, with Max. So it's not been the same kind of problem. I'm not using it at the TV level. But it sounds like for you, Colin, with YouTube specifically, it wouldn't matter because you're using YouTube under just your own profile. So it's going to mix up not personalize really well recommendations, because it's including stuff that, you know, that you personally may not be watching.
That's right. But yeah. This issue of the apps not working with the profile mechanism in the TVOS.
Yeah.
I think that just must be annoying everybody.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that I have to, whether it be Hulu, Paramount Plus, Peacock, all of these do not work with Google's profiles. So that means I end up having to identify myself every time I go into an app, every time I turn on my TV. So yeah. It just gets flat out annoying. So I have a Samsung TV. I don't know if that Samsung TV will get updated. They're adding profiles to the 2024 TVs. I don't know if they'll go back and add them to the earlier TVs. But don't get me started on that fact that they don't keep the TVs updated. If you get a 2024 TV, you're going to get profiles. So there were a couple of other things that hit my radar, Will, that I thought was interesting. One is that LG announced that they're adding Chromecast support to their TVs. And this was actually a little bit of a surprise to me that they did this. I'll get to the surprise in just a sec. You can actually cast to an LG TV today, but what you're really doing is you're mirroring the screen. You're not casting. So you're everything, but basically what you can do is you can connect to the TV and your device's screen shows up on the TV. This is okay for some instances, but kind of sucks, right? Because we want to be using our phone while the video's playing on the TV, and you can't do that. Well, casting solves that. So you can cast the video to the screen, and then you can be monkeying around on your phone like you usually do. So that's probably good for users. But the thing that really interests me here, Will, and I have to do some research on this, is the money flow. So let me explain. Let's say you're watching Tubi. If you watch Tubi on the Samsung TV using the Tubi app, I've no doubt there's an agreement in place between LG and Tubi where LG gets a little bit of a share of the advertising revenue that's being generated through that app. I've no doubt that there's some sort of agreement in place to do that. Well, what happens now if I'm using Tubi on my phone and I cast the video that I'm watching in Tubi on my phone to my TV? Who gets the ad share there? Because if it's just running on my phone, well, it's probably Google, right? But what happens when you cast it? So this is why I was a bit surprised. The only thing I can think is that there's some sort of revenue share agreement between LG and Google on this. How on earth they measure that and track it, I have no idea. But I thought that was pretty interesting. And I should note, this is one of the reasons why I thought that the big TV manufacturers wouldn't support a Chromecast. And that's the case with Samsung, for example. Samsung, you can't cast to a Samsung TV from an Android phone. You can do it if you're using a Samsung phone, but then it's Samsung's own protocol. It's not a Chromecast or an AirPlay or something. It's something different. So anyway, that was, I thought, pretty interesting.
Yeah, to your point, no idea how that revenue would be split and no idea how it would be tracked also over time. So it does sound like a complicated situation, maybe worth doing a little bit more research on if we can.
I fully intend to. And the last thing that really hit my radar about the smart TVs and the TVOSs was that, Roku's grip on their smart TV partners really does continue to slip. TCL announced that their high-end QLED TVs will all be powered by Google TV. And in fact, I was hunting through TCL's press release and I watched their presentation at CES. And they didn't even mention Roku once. I didn't see a Roku screen once. I did see a Google screen. I did see Google TV, but I didn't see that. And this is really important. And we sort of talked about this with Fire TV's win at Panasonic. This control of the interface is so important. And given that the market is definitely swinging away from dongles and towards smart TVs, it's, for Roku, this is really critical. If they want to continue to grow users, they must continue to be a strong force in the smart TV market. So they really can't afford to lose a partner like TCL. I mean, TCL is the second biggest selling TV in the United States and is to a large part responsible for helping make Roku OS the most sold TV OS, that, you know, the with devices being powered by it in the US in 2023 and probably 2022. So they really can't afford to lose TCL. So this is pretty important. Last year, I think Hisense defected to Google TV. All their new TVs were running Google TV. Now you can get other TV OSs on different models from both TCL and Hisense and others, but boy, I would be worried if I was Roku. They really need to keep the dominance with the TV manufacturers. It's a risky situation, I think.
Yeah, worth remembering that Roku has, of course, launched its own line of TVs. So no doubt that's a way that they're looking to mitigate any the kind of shifts in the industry that you're pointing out.
Right. But, you know, those TVs, Will, they're pretty much playing at the low end of the market, the shallow end of the pool. The Google seems to be taking the premium TVs, which,
yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but if I wanted to be on a TV, if my TV OS wanted to be on a TV, I'd want to be on an expensive one, because that's probably going into a house where they have a lot more discretionary spending that they can do through that TV.
Although I think, just to add, I think that Roku did add announce several new high-end TV, smart TV models at CES as well.
Yeah, and you could be right, but Roku hasn't in the past really gone to CES and done CES, so I didn't see any press releases from them, but maybe other TV manufacturers did the press releases.
That's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point. I don't know if they did it at CES, but the announcement did come through my email that they announced several new high-end, and I saw some media around it as well. So, you know, again, it's, I think, relatively early in Roku's introduction of the of their own TVs, and it certainly seems like something they're putting some emphasis behind.
Yeah. But this is, the great thing is this is one of those things that we can track really closely because Roku tells us how many active users they have each quarter. So we'll keep a good eye on that. But anyway, I think that's probably enough about TVs.
Yeah, let's motor along here because we had a few other stories that we wanted to mention. First is also coming out of CES, some news from NBCU. And also from Disney, NBCU announced that they have been having a lot of success with serving programmatic ads in Peacock, and that about 30% of Peacock's ads are now sold programmatically, up from essentially zero just a couple of years ago when they launched it. And interestingly, they really pointed to some recent partnerships with some demand side platforms, DSPs, that helped power a lot of this growth in programmatic for Peacock. And it seems like the big win has been with small to mid-sized companies who have been placing ads through those DSPs on Peacock. And that's obviously really good news for Peacock and NBCU more generally speaking, because it broadens out the base of advertisers from which they can draw revenue, and certainly that sort of diversification is critical to success in the future. And so congrats to NBCU on that. They also announced, NBCU, that they are launching a full-scale launch of their one platform total audience planning and activation platform. I went to an announcement of that last year, and the big news there is that the one platform is meant to just be a unified or single way of planning media across both linear and streaming, Peacock and other streaming from NBC Universal. So this is another kind of big advance for NBC Universal, and pushes them further into so-called audience-based buying and away from the customary way of using Nielsen ratings to sell ads in linear. So that hit my radar from NBC Universal. And then we also had from Disney a slew of updates from them at their annual tech and data showcase, which was done at CES. And they had a number of different points. I'm just going to highlight a few of them. One is the announcement of what they're calling Gateway Shop and Shop the Stream. So that'll be interactive, personalized ads that will allow the viewer to be able to click through and make purchases, you know, using commerce functionality. And that seems like a pretty big win if you think about like programs or movies that are in Disney Plus, and users being able to, a kid being able to, you know, see something that's appealing to them and be able to either, you know, ask their parent to buy it right then or store it or be able to follow up. So that seems like a big win for them. And also they expanded their clean room capability. So there's interoperability with Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud. And there's also a integration between Hulu and Disney Plus, allowing agencies to be able to buy across both of those with a single campaign, and that was apparently done internally with their own technology stack. And last but not least, they also announced something called Magic Words, which is a contextual advertising format that leverages some of their advanced data. And so that means that there can be scene-by-scene analysis and visuals across the Disney library that can capture a moment or a mood within the scenes, and that in turn can help advertisers be able to target their messages more specifically around emotion. So that's part of the larger trend toward contextual in video advertising. So a number of other things from Disney as well, but I think I'll just leave the quick summary at that.
Yeah, and of course, I apologize for the noise in the background. The garbage people have shown up just in the middle of our recording, so there's a little bit of background noise. As you talked about Peacock, Will, one of the things that really jumped out at me was I've been seeing ads during the Premier League games. I actually pay for ad-free Peacock, and it looks like the fill rates are pretty good, but Peacock particularly is leaning very heavily into sports, and I saw some data this week, I think it was from Kantar Media, that says that sports are actually very influential now in helping people sign up for SVOD services. They claim that one in four new subscription video on demand subscribers were coming for live sports, that was the primary motivation for them joining. And I have to say that, you know, that's one of the things I primarily use Peacock for. I do watch a couple of the other shows. But it was absolutely critical in me signing up and me continuing to be a subscriber. So I have a feeling that maybe, I know that Max has added its sports tier and is currently making that available to people for free. They don't have to pay for it yet. But that's probably going to be helpful to them. So sports is really helping the SVOD services grow their subscriber base.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Colin. Peacock has definitely leaned into live sports, and I should have mentioned, actually, that this Saturday, Peacock is going to be streaming exclusively the Chiefs-Dolphins playoff game. That's the first time, apparently, that any playoff game has ever been streamed exclusively. And it's obviously a big test for Peacock that they can support that level of demand. They're looking to the game to introduce Peacock to a lot of new potential subscribers who they'll hopefully be able to then hang on to after the game is over. But it's another example of how Peacock is leaning into live sports. And I think they paid $100 million for the game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I don't know. If I'm a hardcore NFL fan and I'm not a Peacock subscriber, I think I'm hating on the NFL over this, Will. This must drive hardcore fans crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Fragmenting access to the games across all these different services, no question.
Yep. And there was a couple of other things that I think we wanted to mention that hit our radar this week. Netflix is continuing to see pretty strong growth of its advertising-based plan. They recently eclipsed 23 million global monthly active users, according to Amy Reinhart, who's president of advertising at Netflix, and this is pretty good growth. I think that's up 8 million from just a couple of months ago. There were 15 million monthly active users in October was what they said. So that's clearly very, very strong growth. Oh, just a note there, 23 million global monthly active users does not equate to 23 million subscribers on the ad tier. It could be as little as 10 million. You know, it, certainly in the US, there's about 2.5 people per household. So don't conflate the two. Don't conflate monthly active users with subscribers. And the other thing I would say is just be careful with monthly active users. Nobody really declares how they measure it. So it may not mean exactly what you think it means. So, for example, Netflix could be applying a co-viewing multiplier to account for people watching together, in which case they might take the actual number of monthly active users and multiply it by, say, 1.2 or 1.3. I don't know that they're doing that, but they haven't said how they do it. So anyway, assuming that they're measuring it on the same basis each time, I think we can say that this is pretty good growth in a couple of months, right?
I think absolutely it's strong growth in a couple of months, and we'll see how 24 unfolds for them. I think they're going to put a big push behind, increasing the ad-supported tiers numbers. So we're going to see that.
Yep, and you've got one more for us, I think.
Yeah, last one, Colin. Unfortunately, to add on a kind of a downer note, but Amazon announced that it's going to be laying off hundreds of people from its Prime Video and Studios businesses. And that comes in the wake of the full integration of MGM, which they acquired last year. And also, of course, don't forget that coming up in just a couple of weeks, we're going to all of us who watch Prime Video are going to start seeing ads in our Prime Video streams, unless we're willing to pay an extra $2.99 per month to not see the ads. So I saw an estimate recently that suggested that that move could add, I think it was $5 billion annually to Prime Video's revenue. And that plus the cutbacks will certainly increase their profitability, which is what everybody seems to be pushing for these days.
Yeah, like Amazon needs even more revenue, right? Well, I can tell you that they won't be getting a nickel more from me, because I actually don't use Prime Video very much. Although I have to say, I'm probably going to binge Northern Exposure, which just showed up on Prime Video. I loved that show when it was first released, and my wife and I are enjoying reliving some of those episodes. But that said, I will not be paying $2.99 for ad-free viewing, because other than that, I really don't use it that much.
Well, then be prepared to have ads inserted into your Northern Exposure binge viewing experience.
Not if I finish everything before the end of January.
Fair enough.
That's the plan.
that's your challenge, exactly. Finish it before the end of the month. Perfect.
Yep. But I think we're okay, pretty much done. That's a pretty good roundup for today, Will.
We are done. We covered a lot of ground. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you all again next week on Inside the Stream.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.